would like to talk to you now concerning auditing and its skills. The remainder of the lectures this week will be on this subject. First and foremost, in order to audit somebody, you have to have somebody to audit. Now, this is the awfulest truism that ever was stated, but it's a simplicity which is overlooked and overlooked and overlooked and overlooked. It sounds idiotic. Not going to get any place with somebody to audit who is...
I don't want to go any place. I don't want to do anything. Well, all right, Junior, I'll humor you. I'll sit here quietly while you practice this funny stuff. You haven't got a preclear.
It's a very funny thing if you take Homo sapiens and you put him into the brace of good order and discipline contained in an auditing session, that he comes right straight through, measures up, and doesn't do any more. Yes, sir. No, sir. Aye, aye, sir. It's quite remarkable. And the funny part of it is, if you pay much attention to and Q&A with this idea of, well, I don't know whether I want any auditing or not, what'll it do for somebody, but I might as well find out. And you audit people with Scientology along lines, well, we'll try this out. It doesn't matter very much, but we'll try and see if we can go out. You've got a session that sounds roughly like this. Now, you have to mean business. You have to mean business. The very funny part of it is that if you take the most casual person off the street and give him very poor discipline in auditing, he doesn't respond well. He only responds to the exact processes which you have been given and the exact disciplines contained in auditing, and then he responds. Some people have the vague idea that this discipline pertains only to Scientologists. The general public is handled something on... I guess so. I don't know. Maybe. Then they wonder why people get re-stimulated and go away very unhappy. You have to be precise, and that is the first lesson of auditing. Auditing is the introduction of order into the disorder of a preclear. It's a very broad, general definition. I don't think there are any broader definitions or more general definitions than just that. This makes it possible, then, of course, to straighten somebody up and make him sane by putting him under a regimen of good discipline and good regularity of one kind or another. And so it proved one time in a country which found itself inhabited by about 90% psychotics and 10% people who tried to get a show on the road. This country ran everybody they could lay their hands on in through the military establishment for a couple of years, not to have an army, but just to put them under good order and discipline. Most remarkable experiment I ever saw. And so we have this a parallel thing in psychotherapy. Once upon a time, why, they used magic potions and sudden signals and symbols, and the Asclepians did this, and the goddess of Phoebe did that, and all that sort of thing, and their whole rationale. However, where it was successful, introduced order into the person of one kind or another on whatever slender premise. And then as these cults decayed, as the Asclepians decayed in Greece, they went downhill and went through stages of witchcraft and went downhill further and went downhill further, and you finally got modern psychiatry. I haven't any bitter remarks to make about modern psychiatry. That's all over their heads. But they have totally lost before they disappeared. They totally lost the idea of introducing order into a person. See, this was lost. No longer part of the rationale. Introduction of order into the person. So what did they do? They did nothing but introduce disorder into the person. Electric shock, cut out pieces of their brains, and so forth. What they tried to do was make people quiet, not orderly. Blasts of violence, padded cells, so forth. Here we have the psychotics leading the psychotics. The one thing that a psychotic cannot do in common with every other psychotic is introduce ardor into anything. Or do you see that as an inability or a disability or an incapability? You follow that? The introduction of order. Now, when we speak of order, a decade or two ago, there was some chap got into Napoleon's valence, only he was in Germany this time. And he talked about the new order. The new order, the new order, the new order. And all his silly new order did across the boards was introduce disorder. The basic German ability to introduce order became swamped and dedicated to the production of violence so that men were trained in a very orderly fashion to produce violence. Their political handlings, that sort of thing, under that particular regime were very poor. And we've had an object lesson of this, of apparent tremendous order producing at the final receipt point tremendous disorder. Do you follow me? So we could go totally astray and say that a psychiatrist has to be trained for 12 years and read everything, every paragraph of Freud, and read every part of the brain, be able to rattle off at will vast nomenclatures, thingamabobs and goohubbits, or whatever other technical material psychiatry thought it handled. Yet not produce order at the receipt point, you see. We someday could do this in Dianetics and Scientology. We could say that a person has to be trained and drilled and be able to do this and be able to do that and be able to do something or other in order to produce a maximal disorder in a preclinic. You see, what it is a failure to reach the effect point or receipt point results in an anxiety about the receipt point, which results in a total individuation from it and a failure in responsibility toward it, so that one conceives it should be punished. The whole subject of cruelty is contained in the line, evidently, the misestimation of effort. When a person wishes to be cruel, all he needs to do is miscalculate his efforts. That's very interesting when you look it over. The headsman in cutting off somebody's head when this first came up only need miss to be very cruel. So much so that in olden times, when justice was mainly done by the blade and the hemp along the fair shores of the Thames, and we found people paying the hangman. We found people paying the headsman to strike accurately, to hang expertly. Cruelty, however, is a calculated misestimation of effort. For cruelty to be cruel, misestimation of effort is always itself cruel, but intentional cruelty is the calculated misestimation of effort. You hit something far too hard, or you hit something not quite hard enough, or you drive not quite far enough, or you drive a bit far, in order to be cruel. You have passengers in your car. They've been crabbing at you all the way from Oxford on into London. They're all very tired, they're very hungry, they're very upset, and so forth. And to punish them, you drive past the first 10, 12, or 15 places where they could get something to eat. You say, well, I'm going quite fast, and I haven't any time to stop. You see, something of this sort. They'll stop eventually. It's a cruelty, isn't it? And so you can derive most all cruelties as an intentional calculation of misestimated effort. Do it not quite right. Do it a little bit off base. Don't think there's any lack of intention toward cruelty in 19th century psychotherapy. The spirit of vengefulness pervaded that particular field. Punish him, punish him. Eventually, in America, psychiatry became ranked with the courts. There was hardly ever a trial conducted in criminal law without a psychiatrist being present or being consulted one way or the other. Quite amazing. Quite amazing, because courts are basically cruel. A court's effort to bring equity and justice to the world, when it fails, results in a cruelty. They punish. You can prove conclusively that a misestimation of effort never accomplishes the goal. Try it someday. Try it someday. Try to roll a golf ball into a hole when you have it on the putting green by taking a driver to it. It never gets in the hole, does it? Now try to get there by taking a blade of grass and hitting the ball to drive it toward the hole. And it doesn't get into the hole, does it? Misestimation of effort. All violence and abundance of randomness is born out of this thing called a misestimation of effort. When a person intends to be violent, he intends to be cruel, and all he has to do is misestimate the effort a bit, and he's really done a good job of it. A court, then, lacks its positiveness, regardless of whether these laws concerning violence are even of interest. Courts of law, in handling cases, indulge in a spirit of vengefulness, not, and long since they abandoned any idea of this, not a spirit calculated to enhance public safety. All the law has any business having anything to do with is the safety and security of the citizen it intends to protect. That's all law has any business doing. When by victimizing various individuals, it presses into the society new spirits of vengefulness and punishment, it wrecks the thing which it was set up to construct. In other words, the construction of law by punishment is a construction of destruction. If they wished to take a clear estimation of effort, it wouldn't be exactly gauging the right amount of punishment necessary to restrain the criminal. That would not be it at all. It would be the estimation of effort necessary to make somebody non-criminal. But they knew nothing about that. They knew nothing of Dianetics and Scientology. And as a result, they were incapable of measuring even the amount of effort necessary to make somebody non-criminal. Criminals are pretty hard cases. Criminality, psychosis, neurosis, these things all go hand in glove one way or the other. They're interlocked subjects. Because the criminal is basically someone who is turned against the upper dynamics with violence. And the neurotic is somebody who has turned against one or another dynamic. And the psychotic is somebody who has turned against them all. And if you brought him up just another peg or two, he'd turn against them with violence. The estimation of effort necessary to resolve a case, the estimation of effort necessary to resolve a society, are similar things. And when you miscalculate consistently in estimating the case of the preclear, when your auditing skills and disciplines are apparently not reaching the preclear in any way, one of the first things that comes to mind is to punish him. And that is simply a dramatization of the misestimation of effort you made in the first place. Now, because you've misestimated the effort, now, of course, you should misestimate the effort, don't you see? You can become very angry with the preclear who is giving you a very bad time. That's because he is balking your efforts to resolve the case. And he's making you guilty of misestimation of effort and is apparently making you guilty of cruelty. Now, just add that up. He's always accusing you of being cruel. When you misestimate the effort necessary to resolve the case, the end product is a belief on the part of the preclear that you were being cruel. So, the second part of an auditing setup that becomes quite vital is an estimated preclear. Now, first we had a preclear. Now, the next is an estimated preclear. And here I want to thank you for your charity. I want to thank you for it and tell you that I express my appreciation, that I believe it is a great credit to you to have been this kind, this hopeful, and this optimistic. And having thanked you now, we can end cycle on it and go on to more practical matters, such as estimating the case you're trying to resolve correctly, not optimistically, and so breaking your own hearts. It's all very well to be kind, but do you know the greatest kindness is the greatest ARC, and the greatest ARC is the greatest reality? And it lands as the greatest kindness, too. Therefore, a maintenance of ARC requires a proper estimation of where, what, and how. It requires an estimation of the case that is being addressed. That's very, 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 very important. Do you know, with old-time Dianetics and older Scientology, that nearly every failure an auditor had was based on a misestimation of the case? I'll give you an example of this. I'll give you a very good example of this. This sounds cruel to you, but there was a young man, very young, who was an idiot. And he was brought in for processing to an HGC. He was an idiot. And the auditor that was put on him started giving him verbal thinkingness commands. You know, think a thought, you know, and assign an intention. And asking him to mock up things and... Why, this young man was no more in communication with the auditor than anything. And one day, I had the auditor get this very young man to write down his reactions to the auditing question. The young man could not speak. And so he wrote down N. That was his auditing response. If an individual is not complying with the auditing command, you are introducing further disorder into the case. So when you give an auditing command that cannot be complied with, greater disorder will result in the case than was there before. So I took this young man and I said, now, how many thousand questions have you given this person? This young man there was very, very kind. This was a charity case, by the way. And so we put an auditor that was more or less under training on him. And I said, What do you think this young man consists of? Well, what do you think he's like? Oh, he's just been victimized, and everybody's told him to shut up, and so he won't talk anymore. And that's all that's wrong with him. Oh, cool. Come on now. So I said to this young man, I want you to take a trip to the zoo, and I want you to go and look at the baboons. And I want you to stand outside the cage of a baboon and look at him until you know how you could audit that baboon. And when you find out how you could audit that baboon, then you come back and audit this young man. Well, that was a pretty snide remark for Ron to make, wasn't it? That was a pretty mean thing to do. Except the oddity is the case recovered. The auditor did just that. He went out and he stood in front of the baboon's cage and he looked at the baboon and he thought and he thought and he thought, how in the name of common sense would I ever process this baboon? And he finally figured out how he would process the baboon. And he came back and audited the young man, and the young man got over his idiocy and began to talk. Ah, but you say that is a very cruel, crude thing to do, this poor, defenseless idiot, and you say he is a baboon. No, the cruel thing to do is to go on being stupidly holier-than-thou do-good optimistic. And that's the cruel thing to do. Why should this poor kid have spent 3 weeks being pushed around in things he didn't even understand? That was cruelty. And it is a foible of this particular universe, this particular planet, at this particular time, that the truth and a proper estimation of effort is usually adjudicated as a cruelty. It's a total flip. If you say the truth, you're a dog. You must not speak the truth. The reward of those who deal in lies is written on every billboard in the land. Now, therefore, the proper estimation of this case, getting some idea of what this case is all about, getting some idea of to what this case can respond, is quite as important as finding a case to audit in the first place, because it's all part of finding the case. First, you found body, and then you found the case. But you didn't find the case till you estimated the case. There are many ways of doing this. There's the OCA and APA personality reports, which are quite reliable. They have certain things in them can be violated. Somebody could memorize all their answers or something like that, write them all down in the proper places. But if somebody can memorize all their answers and write them all down in the proper places, he's in pretty darn good shape. So even then, they're to some degree self-protective. I remember there's one chap who had corrected IQs and corrected IQs. Corrected. He just corrected thousands of them. He was the organizational test personnel in Washington. And he just corrected and corrected and corrected. He knew all the answers by heart. It was with some amusement that the people around about the place saw that this chap, who was not really in very good shape himself, it was quite a while ago, this chap had given himself on the record an IQ of 172. You see, this is something above John Stuart Mill and other savants. And super genius, you know, super, super, super genius. Of course, the society is so degraded, they think 135 is genius. 135 is genius. No wonder we're in trouble. So he took all these tests one day as a battery and came up once more with a grade of 172. It was very interesting. Of course, he knew all the answers by heart. He did nothing but grade these things. So I got a hold of an entirely disrelated set of questions, had nothing whatsoever to do that, but coordinated against the intelligence tests which are being used, and I fed him those just for curiosity's sake, and he got 172. Quite amusing. But when an individual is set to have a certain IQ, he just works it out so he has a certain IQ. And when he's all set to have a certain personality, he's all set to have that certain personality. That's all. Well, it amounts to, and he'll work it out one way or the other and set it up for you and let you look at it. Quite amazing. But the estimation of the case does not stop with written tests. It goes on to an estimation of a case with an e-meter. And you can see where a case is reading on an e-meter and see what the behavior of the meter is, see what the e-meter does and doesn't do. An electrometer is very handy in this. You can read the tone arm, read how much sensitivity is necessary on the sensitivity knob, and read the behavior of the needle in its swings and its response to questions. And you can get a very decent estimation of a case in that way. That, by the way, is a pretty tricky business. That's a pretty tricky business because you find cases from session to session that aren't clear will vary around and give different manifestations and behavior patterns which you, if you're a clever auditor, can break up so quickly that you say, well, it couldn't possibly have been the case. Just because you can break up a behavior pattern in a hurry does not mean that wasn't the case you were auditing. Get the idea? Just because you can change this thing around and introduce discipline into it does not mean it wasn't the case. Now, you're going to have people telling you this every once in a while. Medical science. Ha! Science is the laugh on this sort of thing. If medical science is a science, then the definition of science has been long since buried and dead and forgotten. Medical science is basically a nomenclature science. Basically nomenclature. And no science is a nomenclature, by definition. It's random. Random systems. It's not really a basically organized thing. And it changes all the time, and it changes its most dear axioms. But medical science will tell you that if the individual recovered from leukemia, he didn't have it. Because, by definition, leukemia is incurable. That wonderful. I mean, you're going to run into this as an auditor. If you were powerful enough, skillful enough in auditing somebody to pick up and audit out the trauma of a broken leg and snap it all back together again and bring somebody up bright and shining at the other end, the first thing you would hear from the MD is that the fellow didn't have a broken leg. That's wonderful logic. If you eradicated it, he never had it at all. And that's probably the truth of the matter, but the MD doesn't recognize it. If you could erase something, it is as though a person never had it at all. See? It's as though he never had it at all, but that's no reason to say he never had it at all. Now, you get somebody who is a raving psycho. You make him sane. Somebody tells you he was never crazy. They've accused you of a misestimation of case.
haven't they?
Well, don't you ever accuse yourself of it. And don't use this type of factor I'm just talking about in order to misestimate and so not resolve cases. A case is as bad off as a case is bad off, and he is as well off as he is well off. Now, there's two ways you can misestimate a case. And one of them is to consider the case far worse than it is. Very often, after I've cautioned somebody, like this young fellow, and sent him, pretty good young officer now, he's seen the elephant, as well as the baboon. And this young man, for the next several weeks, tried to audit all of his pre-clears as though they were baboons. ARC break, ARC break, ARC break. That's sort of the way it all added up, because the estimation of case was so bad on the other side that it created an instant ARC break with a pre-clear. So that's all he audited for the next several weeks, ARC breaks. He couldn't quite understand why. And then at length, his ability to judge became, again, flexible and fluid. And it was possible for him to estimate a case as a case and not as a class of cases. Now, the word psychosis we have never particularly liked. The word neurosis we almost never use in general action. You can go from one year to the next without ever hearing a Scientologist use the word neurotic or neurosis. That's because it's not serviceable. It's an in-between class. And it exposes a class that we do use, which is psycho. Now, psycho is a term we use all the time, but it doesn't evidently mean the same thing as psychosis. We mean the fellow wasn't hitting on all 12. He couldn't add up things and square things around, and his behavior was out of his control. And that's actually what we mean by psycho. Oddly enough, in the field of psychotherapy, it is what we mean as a group that counts today much more effectively than what was meant in the past. You find our nomenclature is leaking steadily in and around all of psychotherapy. Somebody in psychoanalysis, one of the last few practitioners in the British Isles, I think, mentioned the other day that he had recently had an occluded case in an official report. Huh. Wonder whose work. I suppose he's now going to get them to sit in a chair rather than lie on the couch. In other words, there will be new innovations. Gradually, somebody will have to pick him up and teach him how to audit so that he can get some results, too. Of course, that's sort of putting cream on the strawberries, but this will have to be done someday. It'll have to be done very broadly. A whole program of salvage of old psychotherapists has got to be undertaken one of these days. I'm not speaking lightly now. Best way to undertake it is to bring order into their organizations first and bring some kind of orientation of purpose there and get them wheeling through. They haven't any goals right now. They're the pre-clear without a goal, you know. They don't have the goal to make people well or sane or anything. This baffles the Scientology. I took two Scientologists one time to a party and soiree being held in the very upper classes of psychiatry. And these two kids were just getting more and more baffled. Everywhere they looked, everywhere I looked around the place, they were talking to somebody. Their eyes were just starry-eyed. And they went past the third cocktail, getting more and more pop-eyed. They heard me talk about this sort of thing, but they didn't believe it was true. You know, they had an objective reality. Well, Ron says, so there's some possibility of there being something about it, you know, and I'll go along with it. It's okay, because Ron's right and lots of things. They didn't have any subjective reality on it, and boy, they were seeing the elephant in that field. That's for sure. They were hearing things they couldn't possibly believe. and they were learning that the people around them had no slightest idea of improving their fellow man one iota, had no reason or goal for anything they were doing. They weren't even doing it to make money. I remember one of these Scientologists, and he kept nagging at this poor psychiatrist. And he says, but what are you getting out of your profession? I remember the repetitive question he was using. And he had this poor psychiatrist just up the spout, around the bend, practically. Because nothing seemed to satisfy the Scientologist, and naturally wouldn't, because none of the answers made any sense. A personal sense of satisfaction was what they finally settled on. Lord knows satisfaction in doing what or why, since it didn't include satisfaction of having helped anybody, because the fellow became totally 1-5 at the idea of helping people. They didn't deserve it. But a personal sense of satisfaction of not having helped people, I guess, would have been the better class of this sort of thing. Well, it's very cruel of me to kick the dying in this fashion. But anyway, these two Scientologists went past the third cocktail, and then they started in on this group. And I was being very orderly. I just kind of wanted to know what would happen. And the next thing you know, they had that whole place in a confusion. They were driving confusion off of the thing by insisting that it be about something. You see? They insisted that things be about something. And this was a point of view that was the entrance of the case. The idea that things should be about something, or that there should be some purpose in actions, or that there should be some goal or reason for psychotherapy, was the entrance of Scientology into that group. They got 3 pre-clears out of the gathering. Anyway, there is your next point of entrance on a case. Is the case going to go anyplace? Does it want to go anyplace? Next point of entrance. Is there any reason or purpose or anything else connected with anything? That's a remarkable point of entrance, by the way, because if you estimate the case correctly, your next idea is to find a point of entrance so that you get cooperation, contribution, and help from the preclear. You've got to have some sort of an interest in the proceedings. And you may work quite a while before you get your first spark of interest in the proceedings. But this all comes under the heading of make the preclear interested in his own case. And this begins by making him interested in his own life. And this might begin in making him interested first in the lives of others. But it's got to create a session. To create a session, he has to be interested in his own case. Got the idea? Now, that may take interest in others, graded down to interest in self, graded down to interest in case. We don't care how we got there, but he has to be interested in his own case. That is the next ingredient that is necessary to an auditing session. And this is part of the thing we call being in session. We're not now talking from a hidden standard. We're talking very directly and definitely here. We're talking in session means a specific thing and includes practically everything I have given you to date, including a good estimation of the preclear's case. He isn't in session until it's his case that's being audited. And he isn't in session until he's interested in it. And if some other case than his is being audited, he can't be interested in it. And therefore, a proper estimation of case is necessary to the resolution of the case. Because he'll never be in session if you don't have an estimation of case of one kind or another. Just what an estimation of case is, we'll have to talk up at length, because it's been so obscured by former writings in other fields that it's almost impossible to
categorize. For these purposes, it would just be the degree of unclearness. This, the degree that he's not clear would serve as a case estimation. You could even do that by saying he's so many engrams away from being clear. This would still be a case estimation. Or his decision ability, his ability to make a decision is very poor. Or his cognite ability is poor or good or something of the sort. Now, his interest in his own case must grow out of these other things. Now, of course, interest in it is simply a booster to confronting it. The first thing we've got to have is some purpose, some reason to confront it. Otherwise, there's nothing there to confront. Why should I have anything to do with it? I'm just like everybody else. Here I sit in solid apathy. Now, right there, at that point of interest in own case, we have the point where most auditing sessions of early days failed. Because the auditor would get the person interested in his own case almost accidentally, and then, with equal accident, get him disinterested in it. In other words, he's moving from interest in his own case to disinterest in his own case. And the auditor was prone to believe that if a person was interested, early auditors, person was too interested in his own case, he was crazy. That's a mistake I don't want you to make anymore. Such a thing as being obsessed with one's own case. But I'll assure you that that's better than not being obsessed by it if it's going to be cleared. Get the idea? An individual, then, would be better off to be obsessed by his case than not to be interested in it at all. And the real batty cuckoos that you have trouble with are the fellows who are butterflying around the society. You know, they're going, oh, yes, everything's all right. Well, auditing's for somebody else is not for me. Now, they're the cuckoos. They're the real cuckoos. They say, there's no possible improvement and nothing could ever improve me anywhere at any time. That's what they'd like you to believe. That's what they believe themselves. Well, they get along somehow. If you plumb into this, you'll discover some of the wildest mechanisms you ever saw. Just wild. That if they get up in the morning and take some bicarbonate of soda regularly, they will never get lumbago or rheumatism or have any bad luck during the day. And this goes a little bit further, that if they take the bicarbonate of soda properly and take it at the proper time and hour, they won't lose any money that day. The next thing you know, why, they're reading their horoscope to find out what happens at noon. You see, here we're moving right along into unknownness, mystery, superstition. Hold your mouth just right and you'll make the grade, you know? The action no longer has anything to do with the reaction. Everything is disassociated and it depends on some sort of mystery. Now, where we have interest in case, we have a win. And society at large has a preventer mechanism, and they keep people from getting well by persuading everyone that they mustn't be interested in their own case. Well, you see, if a person had been sufficiently interested in his own case all the way along the line, he would have confronted every bit of it, and he wouldn't be crazy now. So we must assume that this don't be interested in your own case campaign that's been going on for a long time was a slave-creating mechanism and was something that made people quite ill. Now, interest in case ceases on two levels, two grounds, two causes, two things bring it about. When they are driven off of it, or when they've resolved it. In other words, if you totally prevented them from confronting their own cases and drove them off of it and discouraged them and told them it was not proper and not possible for them to do so, they were very badly handled in the field of psychotherapy in general. They were pushed around and mauled and victimized and weren't prevented from confronting or being interested in their own case. They would wind up in a rather sad, sorry state. Now, this could be done by very, very bad mauling
under the banner of Scientology, but it certainly would not be any professional auditor. That's a way to kill this interest in known case. And it is an asset on the part of the auditor, and it belongs to his list of gold pieces, treasure, and jewels. So let's not sneer at it, because it's pretty good. Now, the other way is that they could be relieved of worries, anxieties, or necessities to go on obsessively confronting this thing called a case and go on being absorbed and introverted into it to such a degree that they were ineffective. In other words, they could be pitched down, out the bottom, or up. Now, in 19th century psychoanalysis, they pitched them down. They let them communicate themselves out of havingness, and they went out the bottom. You can cure arthritis by driving somebody from 1.5 on the tone scale down to 0.1. That, I assure you, arthritis will not any longer be present. Just put the person into total motion and total apathy about it, and he can no longer hold anything. And arthritis is one of these holding diseases, you know. He went into apathy about it, and so he wasn't interested in it. Now, let's look at the fellow who was going around screaming, "The Indians are after me," in an asylum or something. And he's going around screaming this, and he's screaming it and screaming it. So they put him down on the table and have a transorbital leucotomy, prefrontal lobotomy, and other odd plumbing bits done to him so that he will sit there now and not run around saying the Indians are after him. And he isn't interested in whether any Indians are after him or not, because somebody else has been and they've wrecked him. See? Well, that's the wrong way out. That is, but that way out is observable in the society as the route most commonly taken. This individual is becoming frightened enough, let us say, to be aware of the environment and situation. If left to their own devices, they would go on upscale a bit. Now, emergency may dictate that you suppress their panic, and good order dictates that you should contain them in a perimeter, in a room or something of that sort, and not let them go plunging around. But to slap their faces is to depress them down below the level of terror again, you see? And then they start to go into grief, and they merely become weepy over having been afraid. Now they start back up and start to go into terror again, you see? And now you slap them down again. They just never get through terror. They just never confront the thing at all. The best way to handle people is to make them brave beforehand. Now, the estimation of the case resulting in an interest in the case gives us our clue as to why we have to have very good auditing procedures. First, and in the beginning, we had to have a good address of procedure because we are trying to introduce order into a confusion. And the orderliness to be introduced into the confusion requires an estimation of the confusion. There has to be somebody there to be confused. There has to be an estimate of the confusion. And then, in addition to that, there has to be the person's interest in the confusion for him to accept order into it. Now, to drive him out of the confusion that he is in with a single blast does not resolve the confusion, and he will simply come back to the confusion again. The introduction of order into the confusion will discharge the confusion. And if the confusion is discharged or knocked out, it won't ever come back again, because confusion has no endurance. Order does have. Order does have endurance. Confusion doesn't have. And all of these things I've been talking about are then necessary to a thing we call an auditing session, the address of Scientology, to an immediate individual or collective problem. Now, when you consider this, you see then that the auditor, the Scientologist, is brought forward in terms of training to a point of order or an ability of discipline of one character or another, which is considered inadequate if it only applies to himself and becomes an end goal in itself and does not extend his concept of it as an addressable thing to another individual. Therefore, there's no Scientologists I know of have any other idea than that training drills and drills of discipline are something that you address to the preclear. See, they all think of these things as something you address to the preclear. They are an order that comes about in the preclear if they do these drills right. In other words, they have an extensional look on this. Now, if this subject ever thoroughly squirreled and became Lamanism, which was the squirrel subject that followed after Buddhism or something of that sort, if this subject ever thoroughly squirreled, you would see these TRs becoming an end goal in themselves as a discipline which had no end, goal, purpose, or anything else. But you proved you were a Scientologist because you could go through these disciplines without ever addressing them to anybody. Get the idea? So we get our first conditions, and these include, of course, ahead of all others, but not ahead of a preclear, the auditor. And the auditor, then, is a person, by definition, who finds a preclear, who addresses order into the confusion of the preclear by the use of certain drills and exercises and abilities, and accomplishes this after an estimation in a case and by getting the person interested in the case that is being audited, which is to say, the preclears. Now, all of these things then line up and become necessary and give us a rationale and a discipline which is very easy to grasp, which has actually no esoteric insights or oddities or so forth. It's something you can do and something you have difficulty with. Now, of course, the better shape an individual is in, the less trouble he has with these disciplines and these various principles and activities, with one difference. A person who is cleared and then starts to audit others is never totally capable of believing how bad it can get. It is better to train people and then clear them any day of the week than to clear them and then train them. Much better. Not that it is more efficient or effective for the individual, but on the upper dynamics, it is the only way you could guarantee a subjective reality on good case estimation and an understanding of what the human mind and the other guy is all about. If you've been through some hell yourself, you can know what hell he's going through any day of the week. And if you haven't been, you look in a detached fashion, says, what's wrong with a silly fool? Well, these are the conditions of an auditing session. These are the conditions necessary for a person to be in session. These are the conditions which have to be produced and which, if anyone is to ever be cleared or get well, have to continue throughout the career of auditing. Basically, it's a very simple subject. All order is a very simple subject. It's only when you get new orders, only when you get complications of order that nobody can understand. It's only when you get esoterics and mysteries and so forth, and tying the cat to the bedpost is the first step of learning about metaphysics. You've heard about that one, haven't you?
Yes.
The master always taught the student the neophyte in a certain room, and the master'd tie his cat to the bedpost. Then he'd teach the student something about it. And as time went on, why, the master faded away and died, and one day the student came in, and he was now the master, and he had a new student. He was teaching him all about it, and he said, now I'm going to teach you all about metaphysics. The first thing we do is tie the cat to the bedpost. The basics of what we're doing are elementary. They're very simple. They're very concise. They're very easy to understand. So, let's not avoid them. Thank you.